Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. And the Reverend Matt Cagle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church and sometime campus ministry in Los Angeles, California, currently in the purple zone of COVID reality.
I thought you were about to say the purple zone of our political reality, Matt. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not true. I just looked at my good friend Nate Silver's website and his indication at the congressional, the House, Senate, and presidential level is that you are not purple at all.
We're the tipping point state. Isn't California the tipping point state? And the little snake, we're right there in the middle.
I love the snake, Matt. I love the snake. I do feel like tipping point state, like, you could just rearrange them all. Like, you put California in the middle, and it's the tipping point state. I mean, I kind of get it, but also, like, it doesn't seem that important. like right now, Pennsylvania is the tipping point state.
Yeah.
I think. But, like, let's say Biden loses Pennsylvania but wins Texas.
Like,
it's...
Right.
It's okay.
Yeah. But they're like, that's not a... Texas is unlikely to be the tipping point state. I trust in Nate Silver to... He must know
you're
something.
Back? You're back on the bus?
I can't... Well, I trust his statistical... I mean, he would tell you, like, it's just
he's
a prediction.
Grumpy.
Like, it's not... Yeah, it's like, we're not telling you what's going to happen. We're telling you the probability. Like, he gets really irritated. I'm just saying, like, I'm sure there's some... He's saying something, and the words make sense. I haven't been able to wrap my head around what tipping point state means. But I like the visual. I like the snake.
Yeah, I checked out on all politics podcasts for about 2.5 to 3 years. And so the past 6 months, I've dived back in because I'm now, my politics, I've always been open about it. I'm an Eburian, care about outcomes, and the outcomes of me listening to political podcasts for about 2.5 years, mostly the outcomes were me being more anxious and stressed and nothing changing in the world. So I just got back in bed with Nate, you know, and he's grumpier than he was 4 years ago.
Why do you think he's grumpier?
I think because everybody destroyed him after the last election, I'm guessing. And he had to endure that, like, actually I was right, but, like, you guys are idiots and don't understand how probability works.
Right. Yeah, they keep saying, like, we were more conservative than some outlets. We said he had a 3 in 10 chance. That means that 3 out of 10 times he's going to win. Like, it's not like we said it wasn't going to happen. I don't...
To be fair, probability... Statistics is hard, Matt. I was a civil engineer. I was an engineering major in college. I have one of those degrees, right? Like, and at the time, I was really good at math, right? Like they were training me to be a calculator, and I was good at it, right? And then they're like, you have to take this statistics class. And it was like intro to statistics, so I did not take it very seriously because it was just an open, like, it wasn't in engineering. It was just, like, for everybody to take. And so I was like, a math class with, like, normal and with normies, no problem here. But it's different, like, concepts and stuff, and it, like, actually hurt my brain. I did fine, but, like, I was so frustrated that whole class because, like, this math isn't hard. Why am I do no good? This doesn't make sense. It hurts your brain.
Wow.
Matt, I'm Zach Paris. I'm the pastor of Lutheran Campus Ministry and statistician for campus ministry in the ELCA in one locale.
I wish that we could. So, you know, after the election, they're not going to have a lot to do for a little while. Maybe they could do, like, they could run a forecast for the Southwest California Synod's bishop election.
Oh, I would love it.
And we could get a little snake. We'd
love it.
With conferences.
Bishop's elections should be symbolized by snakes. That's the appropriate religious metaphor, man.
Oh, my gosh. Be amazing.
I didn't know I was going to get fussy about bishop's elections, but they're so full of... Like, oh, it's
I do not
a,
say.
You can't politic. You can't, like, campaign, right?
Oh.
But yet it's an like, we trust the spirit to be involved in the election. Like, if you're having an election where everybody gets to vote on it, take a look at yourself. You're a lot like me, as Neil Young used to say.
Yeah, I went down that track a couple of years ago. made me really upset. And I said, look, there's a whole process we could follow. We could do all these things. We could have these pre-meetings. Here's how we could prepare. It could be a year-long process, not just a, like, one-day process. Then we had one of those meetings. And,
You regretted everything.
No, I just don't think there's any way to fix the process we're done. So,
I mean, the alternative, the Episcopalians do it. What I have learned, Matt, having now spent over 10 years with one foot in the Episcopal world, one foot in the Lutheran world, is that we do things differently, but nobody does anything better than anybody else. Things only look better when you're standing on one side of the thing. So with their bishop selections, they're not ecclesiastical ballot, which is a distinctive mark of ELCA bishops elections. Any clergy person, rostered person, do they think be rostered word in sacrament, I bet, can be nominated from the floor of an assembly, but they have nominating search committees for dioceses. So they do the work that you're talking about us doing really poorly with like conference gatherings and stuff. There's a smaller group of people who bring forth several, like three or four candidates that then the diocese in there gets to vote on, so that there's been the good part of that, the pro side of that pro-con thing, right, is that they do the discernment piece. I mean, it is a lifetime appointment, not a six-year appointment. which, I'm just, let's...
Really? Wow.
Yeah, term limits is a great idea for the Supreme Court and for bishops, because reality. So they don't do it every 6 years like we do, but...
I don't know.
It's different.
Well, I do know we're going online, so that should make it interesting, too.
For your next Senate Assembly, it's definitely online.
Well, but I'm confused. Like, this is what I'm confused about, because my understanding is that the Holy Spirit cannot move through the virtual airwaves to bless the communion elements and magically transform them, but somehow the Holy Spirit can move to elect a bishop. That's interesting. Just our pneumatology is fascinating.
From where I sit, Matt, true, right? The Holy Spirit does not move through Zoom. And also, all bishop selections should be declared invalid that happen over Zoom. That's mine. Because it's not real.
I thought you were going to end with just should be declared invalid. Just all of them.
I mean, I paused for a second, I feel like.
It was a very pregnant pause. 9 months right there. No, it was almost coming.
Hey, Matt, we've had a cold snap here, which means I'm starting to get like some ski itching. You know, I'm probably maybe 2 or 3 weeks away from getting my first turns in. And it was cold this weekend, Matt. We got down near Steamboat Springs. They got 30 below on Monday morning. We were in single digits. We probably got 7-8 inches of snow here. It's been chilly. And yesterday, I got a call from my landlord who wanted to sit down and talk about how expensive my heating bill has been. And I said, well, I mean, it's fine. Come on over. Door's always open.
Wow.
Thank you.
Wow.
Thank you.
Are you working on that one for a while or?
I've been using it. I've been workshopping it. I mean, we're using an outline today. So I put joke into the outline.
Oh, I didn't even see it. I didn't even see that.
I had a different joke, but.
Mime. It says mime joke.
Hey,
man. I'm coming.
Have you heard about this election? People have been talking about this election, Matt. They're talking about a lot of issues. I've just recently got really involved. You heard it. I've been listening to Nate Silver. I'm not pod saving America this year. Because I don't need that in my life. I don't need, like, I just want facts, okay? And probabilities.
Yeah. Yeah.
But there's one issue that people, I've heard about it recently, that people are not talking about, Matt, and that is that every year in this country, hundreds, if not thousands of children are sent away to mime school, never to be heard from again.
Wow.
And it is the call of this church to be the voice for the voiceless, and I think we got to start speaking up for these kids who can't speak.
That's why you come to the Vinyl Preacher for the dad jokes. It's good. You and Tim Rowe. It's got
We gotta get Timmy on the old podcast here.
You guys can do a dad joke. That'll be great. That'll be great.
Oh, hey, it's let's talk about things that happened in the past, Matt, because it is November now. It's the day before the election, I believe, when this podcast is coming out.
Yeah, you hear it.
So we don't have to pretend to respond to the election results. But Halloween has happened. Are your kids, did you guys go trick-or-treating? What was your, how did you handle trick-or-treating?
Yeah, we're, well, I don't know. We're not doing, I mean, my family is not doing trick-or-treating. We do have family Frozen costumes. So
who are you?
Children are unoriginally obsessed with Anna and Elsa. Now, I mean, the nice thing when they were really young is that I could just decide what they were going to be. Mm-hmm. And so we could have the whole Jurassic Park cosplay, and it was great. But now they get to decide. It's now that
parenting.
Just means they be like, they're just going to be Anna and Elsa. I'm going to be, Chris made out of felt an Olaf hat for me to wear. So I'm very excited about that. And then she's got some antlers.
Oh, nice.
Ben. So we're going to do a little Frozen day and photo shoot.
Just cosplay around the house?
Yeah, pretty much. Maybe walk around the neighborhood. We are the first family of Arendelle. I don't know if I've told that story on the podcast. But when we went to Disneyland, when we went to California Adventure, we took them to the Frozen show, which they were, ended up being terrified of and did not really enjoy. But they were obsessed with Frozen, so I had to take
Children
them.
Are great.
And I showed up. I go to get in line. And this, one of the cast members, sorry, I almost used, an incorrect term. One of the cast members was every time I have to select, he says, I need to select the first family of Arendelle. Would you like to be the first family of Arendelle? I was like, what does that mean? I'm like, I was actually a little terrified.
What are the responsibilities?
I was like, what does that mean? Because I'm going to have to take these two to use the restroom probably more than once. So, what do I, and they're going to be terrified of any large costumed things. So what? He's like, no, you just, you get to go in first, and then you can sit wherever you want to. You get a little certificate that says First Family of Arendelle on it. So I have that certificate. Chris thinks he took pity on me because it looked like I was a single dad taking my kids to Disneyland. My three-year-olds, this was almost a year ago, right? So they were even younger. But yeah, we were the first family, and they ushered us in first, and everyone applauded for us.
Oh,
just
wow.
Me and Sierra and Maya, all these hundreds of people waiting in line to get into the show. And then we come in, and they usher us down to the front row, and they're like, you can sit anywhere. And I said, we're going to sit up there because Maya is terrified of costume. They were like, really? Like, you could sit right here. I'm like, she's gonna be terrified. I can't. So I went and sat way up high. I was like, thank you. I really appreciate it. But
then everyone got to walk by and pay tribute to you.
Right, that's what I thought would happen. But then that was pretty much, and then we got a special ticket to go and visit Elsa afterwards in her little photo area underground somewhere. It was just Elsa.
It was where they bored the kids to go to mime school?
Right. And my kids assumed that Anna was taking a nap. They made up a story about how she was taking a nap. But we got our picture taken with Elsa. That was cool.
That's great.
So, dad of the year right there.
Dad of the year. Matt, not only do you have the certificate, but it's framed and you hang it in your Zoom background alongside of Chris's historically significant art.
That's what I should do.
It's equal. I've always been impressed with the matting. That's professional matting, it looks like. You went to that back counter at Michael's, didn't you?
Amazon. Oh. Unjust labor. It's all
That's what we're doing, Matt. I received a couple packages from China today, because we're not going to trick-or-treat as well. But it is kind of fun. This is the first holiday. I'd say this is the first holiday that our daughter Zelma, who's 4 years old, is legitimately psyched for. In the car, we're doing countdowns of Papa, there's only 3 days to Halloween, that kind of stuff. Angie's getting the excitement because she is going to school for now, and she goes to 87 schools. We've talked about it before on the podcast, and she gets to wear a costume one day this week to each of the schools. So she's already worn it a couple times. She gets to wear it. She wore it to ski class. She wore it to Spanish school, and tomorrow she gets to wear it to the real preschool. But my package is from China, Matt. I'm kind of proud of myself. I'm striving to achieve your heights of Dad of the Year. I don't know if they're going to be certificates. I suspect that at the end of the holiday, Hannah, the vinyl spouse, will print up a certificate and hand it to me. And it'll have a seal on it, and she's just going to be incredibly grateful for my incredible parenting. It's a package of Easter eggs, which you can't find right now. And then I get a bunch of little LED lights. So what we're going to do with some of the kids on the block that we've seen is we're going to have a glow-in-the-dark Halloween Easter egg hunt, like in the backyard.
Well done, but with lights. I mean, that, like...
You put the LEDs into them.
But you're... That's another level. Yeah.
Well, all the glow-in-the-darks, I thought of it late, and all of the glow-in-dark ones are not available with Amazon Prime, so they could not arrive before the holiday. And I, too, need to take advantage of unfair labor practices to make my child happy.
That's a very cool idea, though. Good job.
I'll let you know how it goes. You're doing church. We did not. One of the biggest events that happens in the life of our campus ministry is pumpkin carving, Matt. It is the highest of holidays, and I'm dead serious. We get the most people to come to pumpkin carving because it's one of those like stable family things that you're missing out on for the first time, oftentimes in life. And we do it together, and we get a bunch of pumpkins and. It's a big deal, but we couldn't. I've had to deal with, you know, as I mentioned, it was single digits and we had 8 inches of snow. Figuring out how to gather and do dinner exclusively outside, even with these lovely gas fire pits we have, just couldn't make it happen. But I saw on the internet, Matt, that St. Mark's is doing Halloween programming.
That's so funny. People like started sharing that and liking that. And I was like, is this just that we're doing something? People are like, oh my God, like we're actually doing something. Peace Camp, this organization we partner with for summer program.
Former guests on the podcast.
That's right. I forgot that. They're going to do a just like a drive-through grab-and-go trick-or-treat. So not even the trunks, not even the decorations and all that. Just
you want to be careful how you word that, Matt. No trunks trick-or-treating. It's just like you'll get some like Porky Pig kind of situations you want to be careful of.
Right. Yeah. Good point. So they're just doing a little trick or treat through the drive thru. That's about it.
That's more than just it this year, Matt. That is enough to get people sharing
like,
stuff, man.
Yeah. Can we donate some candy? Like people at church or on Zoom are like, where can I donate candy? And I was like, okay. Well, it's cool.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Normally we do a big haunted house, but now this year it would actually be a terrifying COVID mess. So
it would be the most spooky house you've ever done, man.
Just pretty bad. So not gonna do that. I'll tell you what we did do though, Zach. We Reformation Sunday.
You observed it?
I did.
Because we didn't on the podcast.
We observed it. We even sang a Mighty Fortress twice. It was incredible. So we've been trying to decide whether to move outside. Like, are we going to do worship outside? What are we going to do? What should we do? And I was like, this is crazy. This is going to be a shit ton of work. And I don't know if anybody's going to show up to it. So we're like, well, maybe we should just ask the church what they want to do. So this is what we did.
Strange idea, Matt.
Because we're... We did breakout rooms, and we said, what do you want to do? You want to continue worshiping online? Do you want to do some drive-through stuff? Do you want to do worship on the patio? Like, and everybody said, well, first of all, we should stay online, partly because 20% of the people gathering online are not even in state. They're in Texas and New York and all over the place. Some of them don't worship with their church because their church just records something for them to watch. Mm-hmm. They have no interest in that, and so they like the interactive stuff. And then they told me, well, how are you going to worship outside? It's going to be winter. And I said, well, I look to you all to remind me of that because I'm from Chicago, and winter means something different there. I was like, oh, we're in LA. We could worship outside.
Matt, we literally had conversations about like, it's not going to be that cold. Should we shovel the snow so we can set up tables? Like,
I know. Like, it's 60, so we're like, it's going to be cold. I'm like, okay, well, that's great. Good to know. So I guess we're staying online through the winter months, because that's what folks wanted. Now, I did realize pretty quickly afterwards that, like, it's a pretty weighted sample size. People that have been showing up for online worship for 6 months are probably going to be in favor of it. Mm-hmm. And we did not do, it's probably not what Nate Silver would call a gold standard poll, where we called people
you're
in the room.
You're going to be one of those C-minus Rasmussen polls.
Yeah, that's what we are. It was a Rasmussen poll. But it was super weird. I mean, you know, just even in terms of, like, ecclesiology, it did strike me how weird it is that our community is evolving. Like, I have people that are super involved in our online worship that are in Texas and New York. What does that mean? Like, mm-hmm. if that was just a 1 month experiment, if you want, now we're 6 months on, this thing could drag on for another year. What does that mean? Like, how do I make sure that I'm including them, that they're not just visitors, you know, but how do I, what does hospitality look like? I don't have any answers. I just think it's interesting. So that's what things look like. At the same time, I'm glad that we did preparations for outdoor stuff, because we got a funeral coming up made you outdoors on the patio. And so we can actually, I mean, we'll see if we're able to do it. And but I think that's what it's going to look like for us. It's going to look like online worship. And if we need to do an outdoor thing, we can do it. But people aren't asking for it on Sundays. So madness. Madness. Isn't that crazy? People were like, no, we don't want to. I was like, okay.
Oh.
And I think it's nuts, because it is such a great splintering that I can see, like, just on social media, right? Where, like, even in our own conference, we've got people that are pre-recording stuff. I've got people that are doing drive-in worship, where it's like, there's like a pastor and a music team, and everybody else is in their cars and they honk for the amen, right? They do that whole thing. I mean, they seem to value it. That's okay. Mm-hmm. But like my church, I have no interest in that. But if my church was all like, we definitely would do that, everybody said they were going to do it, they're going to show up, I'd be like, okay, well, I'll work with you. But nope. So like all these different churches are finding just very different ways of being community. And I just, nuts. Nuts.
It is. It reminds me, Matt, I one of my alums, who I love dearly and now serves on our board of directors, is one of our alumni members. You know, when I first got to Boulder, I had ideas about like what doing ministry in Boulder would look like, you know, like, because I'm who I am, and like I have my ideas of what the city looks like and what campus is about. But my alum, Durango, was one of pretty early on, you know, one of our deeply involved members, and Durango is especially was at the time super Anglo-Catholic, and it turns out ministry was about serving like other people and not just like my like dreams. You got to find ways to do it with integrity, you know, so that you're not like completely sacrificing yourself.
Sure.
But you got to go with the people that are there, you know. So I kissed an altar one time with an Episcopal bishop, and all kinds of things I never would have like chosen to do myself, but has been this big like learning experience, or a big lesson for me, you know, about what ministry is about.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I don't know if you heard that, man. I scoffed a little bit with the honks on the amens. But if that's what students wanted to do, I'd be like, that's my job. Right? My job is to make that happen.
I mean, I looked at it, I was like, well, there's nothing like theologically. I mean, like, it's as good as anything else right now. Okay, you know? But yeah. I wonder if Joshua could tell us what to do.
I mean, that's basically the message of Joshua. Whatever. It's probably good enough right now. He seems super chill.
Oh, Joshua. But later on, they would name a tree after him.
And that seems important to you.
After that tree. So that's good.
It all started right here.
I mean, I guess they also named Jesus after him, right? Isn't this basically...
Yeshua, yeah.
I mean, that's... I don't know. Time for the text?
T4T.
Joshua chapter 24. I mean, it's kind of fun. We started in Genesis, went through Exodus, and here we are with
Matt, full disclosure, I have no idea how long ago in the actual text last week's reading was. Yeah. I don't have any context. I don't know the course of the narrative in Joshua, because this just feels like the only bits you get in the lectionary are these, like, two stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what did we get last week? Is that Moses?
Moses dying, is that right?
Okay.
Was that even in Joshua, or was it in Deuteronomy?
I can't remember if that was last. Yeah, so we had Deuteronomy.
We've got an outline, but we don't have research.
Should we get the Jericho next week, or what is that? Do we get that?
You read, I'll do research on the fly.
I mean, Joshua fought the Battle of Jericho, don't we get that? I
feel like it seems important. Well, last week was All Saints, so it was Revelation, so that is out of the thing. But on proper 25, it was Deuteronomy, which is about Joshua, but it's about Moses dying, but not in the book. This is just a random, appears to be random. Next week, you don't get the Battle of Jericho. You get a little bit of Deborah in Judges. Oh, and then it's Christ the King in Ezekiel.
Okay.
So this is the only stop we're making this year in Yeshua.
Yeshua. We covered Deborah earlier this year in our non-lectionary
Debbie
series. That is an interesting story. We did not read the part about the nail through the head. That's also a part of that. Deborah. Oh. Deborah and Barak.
Deborah and Barak. Tune in next week when I learn about this for the first time.
It's going to be great. Joshua gathered all the tribes of Israel to Shechem and summoned the leaders, the heads, the judges, and the officers of Israel. They presented themselves before God. And Joshua said to the people, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, long ago your ancestors Terah and his sons Abraham and Nahor lived beyond the Euphrates and served other gods. Then I took your father Abraham from beyond the river and led him through all the land of Canaan and made his offspring many." This is new. This is like a new
bunnies, y'all.
I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. Do we get that story like they serve other gods and then God reaches... I mean, this is like a different narrative.
I feel like it's reading into it, yeah. I did not know Terah. I did not. Right? Perhaps it is. I'll have to go back and look. And the brother of Abraham is a detail that I did not recall.
Right. Okay. Well, now we're gonna come into the story. We know a little bit now. Therefore, revere the Lord and serve Him in sincerity and faithfulness. Put away the gods that your ancestors served beyond the river. Beyond the river. Mm. That sounds like an R.E.M. song. And in Egypt, and serve the Lord now. If you are unwilling to serve the Lord, choose this day whom you will serve, whether the gods your ancestors served in the region beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. As for me and my household, we will put this on some decor to put in our homes, whether on pillows or framed things. As for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Then the people answered, "Far be it from us that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods, for it is the Lord our God who brought us and our ancestors up from the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery, and who did those great signs in our sight. He protected us all along the way that we went, and among all the peoples through whom we passed. And the Lord drove out before us all the peoples, the Amorites who lived in the land. Therefore we also will serve the Lord, for He is our God." That is what people say. Every time they are tempted, they respond with that entire litany. Is this something... This feels like a liturgy to me. Like, this feels like people are not like... Oh, they just all said in unison together, "Far be it from..." This feels more like this is a thing that we all are saying, like, in this exchange, right? I don't know. "But Joshua said to the people, 'You cannot serve the Lord, for He is a holy God. He is a jealous God. He will not forgive your transgressions or your sins. If you forsake the Lord and serve foreign gods, then He will turn and do you harm and consume you after having done you good,' which is also what I say to my congregation." "And the people said to Joshua, 'No, we will serve the Lord.' And Joshua said to them, 'No, you won't.' And they said, 'Yes, we will.' And Joshua said, 'You are witnesses against yourselves that you have chosen the Lord to serve Him.'" Again, this is basically a Sunday morning at my church. "And they said, 'We are witnesses.' And He said, 'Okay, then put away the foreign gods that are among you. I know they're out there. I know you got them. And incline your hearts to the Lord, the God of Israel.' The people said to Joshua, 'The Lord our God we will serve, and Him we will obey.' So Joshua made a covenant with the people that day and made statutes and ordinances for them at Shechem."
So done a little bit of research, Matt, while you were reading.
Yeah.
The father of Abraham, Terah, and his brother Nahor, and he had another brother who died before his father, are mentioned. There's a whole, like, 10-15 verses of genealogy where they go the descendants of Shem, and they go all the way from Shem, which is quite a number of generations, to get to Abram. And then they pick up and move from Ur of the Chaldeans, and they move... They're going to move to Canaan, but they stop in... Oh, gosh, where did they stop? They don't go all the way. They... Haran. They go to Haran, and they settle there. So the family with the father and the brother settle in there. And then Yahweh comes to Abram and calls him... They were on their way to Canaan, but they decided to settle in Haran. Then Yahweh calls on Abram, and that's when the whole, like, Yahweh gets introduced to Abram, and it... Then there's no more mention of the father. The father dies there at 205 years old, but the brother just disappears from the story. Does not explicitly go with him or stay. He just, Nahor no longer appears.
I mean, that's pretty fascinating, right? Because then I feel like in the lectionary, we just get like, and God said to Abram, boom, and we're off. But there's like this whole prequel.
Yeah,
it's kind of interesting.
There's enough to make, I don't know, some,
and there's, right? Yeah.
Probably, we could probably make three crappy movies out of that.
I think so.
We've got the hairstyles. We're going to recreate it perfectly with our 77 Star Wars hair.
I mean, even beyond making crappy movies, it's an interesting, like, it's an interesting take on what God does, right? Like, because we usually hear this story, like, with no context. God just, like, shows up and talks to this guy. But to be like, no, God reached out to this, to these ancestors beyond the Euphrates, who were serving other gods, and God pulls them into salvation history. And I don't know if that's a thing that we can find that pattern happening, right? That God, like, reaches out, and you're living your life, you're beyond the river, whatever, that's a powerful image, serving other gods, whatever that looks like, and God reaches out and pulls you into a different story. That's just, it's interesting.
I'd also lean a bit into one of the ideas we I try to talk about with students is that when we talk about call and vocation, a lot of it can be this, use this biblical imagery of like a voice booming from heaven and telling you something completely new and different, and that's what you're supposed to do, and there's great clarity, and it's a great departure from what you've done. But before that call happens, they were already planning to move to Canaan. It was an idea that was already in their heads, not necessarily because Yahweh explicitly put it there, but that the call is an affirmation of a process, of a decision, of a direction that they had already been moving in. And so it's not completely out of nowhere. I mean, that's kind of paired with, like, calling them from across the river. So there is this brand newness to them. But there is an affirmation of the standard just gets too high, right, for God's call to be a big booming voice and to speak to you out of burning bushes and stuff. And that in real life, like with Abraham, it is more subtle, slow affirmations of, well, we moved from Ur of the Chaldeans to Haran, and well, that seemed like a good move, so maybe we'll do the next move, you know, the way we've talked on the podcast about things like seminary and stuff.
Yeah. I want to do a whole, like, series. I feel like there could be a Lenten theme, beyond the river. What year do we get Abram? Like, there's one year when I feel like it's a whole, like, Abraham thing.
Matt, I've already had two deep dives of research during the podcast this episode. I'm not going to do a third one.
All right, what else you got on Joshua?
Here's the thing. I think the thing that would be important in reading this story that's going to be hard to do on Zoom is to put it in context, right? This story comes across as incredibly strong, right? Like, you're making fun of it because, like, I'm not going to stand up in front of my congregation and say these direct accusing things to me, and they're not going to respond in bold affirmation of those things. I think you got to see this story where it is here in Joshua, towards the end of the Torah, where none of this happened, right? Like, this isn't true. right? It's like I hear the echoes of in the Gospels when the Judeans tell Jesus, we are Judeans and have never been slaves to anyone, right? Like this is the time when Joshua says to the people, like, you got to put away the false gods, the foreign gods. Didn't we 2 months ago we had a whole reading about this where they love a good foreign god, right? There was a cow we made, and Moses threw down some pieces of paper on the ground really extravagantly, and like the terms of the covenant here are so intense, right? Are you sure you want to do this? Because you're swearing against yourself, because when you break the covenant, we all know that God's going to come in here and kick your asses. The covenant has been broken and broken and broken at this point a number of times, and God always says, I'm going to be really upset, and God gets really upset, but then the same thing always happens, and it's not smiting all the people, it's God reestablishes the covenant. So it's not quite like satire isn't exactly the same word, right? But there is a disconnect between this proclamation and the reality, the lived reality of the people. And I think there is this retelling of the story that is very liturgical here, right? But the thing about the covenant is that it is made to be broken, that life as the people of God, as covenant people, right, is not essentially about like keeping the covenant, about following all the rules, but it's about this pattern of life where we remember what God has done, right? That your father Abraham, I brought him across the river, like I brought you across the river, like I brought all these other people across the river. And then God reestablishes the covenant and goes back to that Abraham covenant, which is I will be your God and you will be my people, where again, all of the heavy lifting is on God's side of things. And then we're going to break it and find a way not to be the people of God. And the cycle's going to continue. But this is an important part of the process. Even it's like I'm in favor of rules. I think we should always have rules, right? I don't know that we should always follow rules, but it's a very good idea to have rules. That same sort of thing with the covenant, right? Like there are things to have so that when we break it, we know that we're breaking it. And there are some like consequences to that, and give some gravity to our life together.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like I'm interested in Joshua here too. Like the covenant is made to be broken, and then made to be reformed. Right. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's part of where Joshua's coming from, that like, he needs to know that, like, because he's probably seen all that happen. He's seen it all been broken before. And he's like, okay, if we're going to do this thing together, if we're going to keep moving forward, I need to know you're going to be with me. I need to know there's going to be a covenant. I need to know we're in agreement about something. And maybe he knows that, like, it's going to be broken. Maybe he's an idiot, or maybe a satire. I'm not sure which one it is. But I feel like he needs, like, if you're going to start this new chapter, you got to get on the same page. There's got to be some kind of covenant making, even if you know it's going to have to be broken and reformed again and again. But there's the idea that you might need some kind of ritual if you're beginning another chapter. It might be helpful for a leader, if we're thinking about Joshua as a leader and what he's trying to do, to say, okay.
That's, yeah, and one campus ministry note, right? Like a part of my job is when students are excited to do something, it's my job to help them make it happen. Right. But I also bring some wisdom to things, right? So that when we're excited about doing something that hasn't worked in the past because maybe we haven't really committed to it or followed through on it, we have this kind of a conversation, right? Like, if this is what you want to do, I am here. It's my job to help you do it. But remember last time it didn't work out so good. So maybe this time we're going to like, we keep talking about a movie night. We tried to plan movie night 2 years ago and we've had a comedy of errors just over and over again of like, it was all going to work and then something happened and we canceled it. And then we had a new date. And then like the day of, we realized none of the leaders could actually go to, were actually going to be there. So we were planning movie night for nobody. And it's just this like, so we always like bring up like, you sure you want to do a movie night? Because I mean, a movie night sounds like a great idea. People like movies. We've got an outdoor screen, projector. But what are you gonna do different this time?
I know that's really where my conversation with my church came from last Sunday, which is where I was like, okay, I've made the mistake of doing a bunch of work for something nobody wants, so I don't want to do that. And then I had this moment of terror the night before Sunday where I was like, oh God, I know what this is going to be. This is going to turn into like everybody come up with ideas for me to do. Like, you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this, or you could do this. And I was like, I had a whole line where it was going to be like, okay, like, we can want to play basketball, but if I don't have five players, like, it's not going to happen. Like, how do I... Somehow, this has to be a thing that we actually want to do together. Like, if you all want to worship outside, we can do it. But this is what's going to take. Like, this is what's going to take. It's not something I can do on my own. And that,
you
that's
need LeBron and AD
gotta,
there, man. Right? You need a
Hang on, Rondo. I did not become that. But I think that is definitely, I mean, like, yes. Like, you're also the voice of wisdom. And I think I feel like I could also track in the almost 10 years now that I've been in ministry, like, my own learning around that, where I'm like, nope, not taking on a project until I know I've got at least enough buy-in that I'll be okay with it, either way. So I think that's part of this, right? I think that's part of this need for a covenant, even if you know it's not all going to work out.
You know it's not going to work out, right? Which I think might be a nice segue into the gospel, right? That they're reestablishing a covenant that if they really like look around, like, this is not going to have work out, you know, but it doesn't mean you don't do it. We're moving along here, Matthew, getting towards the apocalyptic end, which is intense. Jesus said, then the kingdom of heaven will be like this. 10 bridesmaids, Jesus, fan of the metric system. They took their lamps and they went to meet their bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. And when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks, nice, of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, all of them became drowsy and slept like in a cartoon. But at midnight, there was a shout, look, here is the bridegroom, come out to meet him. And then all those bridesmaids got up and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise replied, the wise also served as the chair of the local congregation stewardship committee. No, there will not be enough for you and for us. You had better go to the dealers. Hey, Matt. We got to talk about these lamp oil dealers.
Dealers.
Man.
Dealers.
And buy some for yourselves. And while they went to buy it, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went with him into the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Priya Parker well, she's pleased. You got to close that door. Later, the other bridesmaids came along, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he replied, truly, I tell you, I do not know you, which is exactly the kind of thing you expect Jesus to say. Keep awake, therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour. Whew. Good news. It just preaches itself, Matt.
Just preaches itself.
Matt, we have probably talked about it before on the podcast, or at least hinted at it, but the different cultures have different understandings of how time works. So how a wedding would have worked in the ancient Near East is the bridegroom would go off to get married from his house, and then he would return carrying his bride over the threshold, like you see on the TV shows, and that's where the party would be. People in the ancient Near East, though, did lack watches, Matt. They did not observe daylight savings time. They had no idea, but they had some idea, but not a very good idea of what time it was. So things happened, not at like 4 p.m. or when, you know, at those sorts of arbitrary times, but things happened. Things were supposed to happen when, like the wedding banquet happens when the most important people show up. So that's when it happens. So you have a general idea, and so they're waiting. It's not that necessarily that the party or the wedding banquet was delayed exactly, but that they didn't know. Nobody knew when exactly it would happen. And so we're hinting, we've got these allusions to the coming of the kingdom that Matthew has been all about. And so it's interesting, Matt. Like, it's just so, like, this is hard, Matt. Like, what's the point of this? You know, like, generosity, care for your neighbor, all those things seem to be out the window here.
Yeah.
And if it's about preparation, here's the twist that's interesting, right? If you want to read this story as a story that's about be prepared, the reality is they didn't know what to be prepared for. That's the point I want to make. They didn't know when the bridegroom would be there. They didn't know how much oil would be enough oil, right? If it was even later, maybe the other bridesmaids would run out of oil too. And what I think, how I would like to move this story to deal with some of the rough edges, or to put them in context, not to sand them down, is to say that it is an emphasis that the preparation is an active thing, and that one of the things that makes me frustrated as a Lutheran is when we come into something hard and we'll say, like the smart kid in the seminary class in the first row who says, it's a paradox, it's both and, right? As if that has, like, solved the problem, and so now we don't have to do anything, we just get to, like, dealt with that. But that as a postmodernist, liminal, I think, is a much better way of viewing things, that the tension between the two paradoxes should move us in a direction. And so it could be easy enough for us to wait for the coming of the kingdom, like it might be easy enough for us to wait until this pandemic is over. So then we can go back to being real church, right? But that the call is, that the preparation that I think Jesus is calling us to is not be prepared when this thing, so that you're ready to go. Like, it's not just wait it out, right? It's an active investment in the waiting that I think is, like, happening, right? And people, I think maybe that's why people get excited about you posting on Facebook that your church is doing something while we're waiting, you know?
Doing something.
Just do something.
So this is not about how you didn't have your emergency kit prepared. You did not prepare enough hand sanitizer, and now you can't get any. It's not at the stores. You didn't stock up your toilet paper. Nope. You cannot have any of mine. Go to the dealers.
Go to the dealers, man. I mean, at least that's my take, man.
I do like the, I mean, it's a tough text to unpack. I mean, I think you gave us, like, one of the better ways through it. It is amazing how this, I mean, it's a familiar passage because I feel like it gets used in hymnody, it gets used in, I mean, just the imagery of the imagery of these lamps, of the oil, of the darkness and light that's happening here, the kind of terror of the door was shut, which we get in a lot of these parables at the end of Matthew this time of year. But it's all there. Like, there's power in the imagery. And so, yeah, you got to unpack some of it. I know you can't just throw up your hands and say, you can't explain it, but I would let the imagery do some of the work, too, because I think the imagery, maybe we like any story with fire in it. The story's got a little fire in it.
It's got a little fire. A little fire.
So let that imagery do some.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would try to move the harsh edges towards the reality that what we do in that preparation, in living in that hope, matters, right? It is going to matter, right? Like, when our door is shut, like the doors of our churches have been shut for 8 months now, and depending on how we've been preparing and waiting, there have been other people on the sides of those doors. Right? Like, I don't know what the deal is with y'all's, like, feeding. I'm guessing it's not happening. Is it happening? I don't know. Right? There are lots of things y'all do that you haven't, that lots of things that churches around the country do that they haven't been able to do because we had to close the doors. And so there's a negative side to that, but there can also be the positive side of, like, how big of a deal it can be to do drive-through trick-or-treating or the thing that happened to me, Matt, this is where I'm at. I posted a picture of it on Facebook. But Megan, who's our program assistant, program coordinator here at Campus Ministry in Boulder, is a magician. And she covertly put notes for students to write, appreciative notes to me, in the food delivery boxes 1 week. And then, like, hung them up like a pennant in my office. But she didn't tell me about it. And I didn't notice it for 2 weeks.
Incredible.
Which, one, I'm just not in the office that much, you know, but also, like, everything's on fire. But, right, that's a really, like, small waiting thing that would not normally happen, but also matters, right? Like, it affected me, you know?
Yeah.
So what, while we wait, Matt, we need to be active, we need to be doing stuff in hope here. One of the things you need to be doing is listening to music. What are you going to be listening to?
Well, nothing on vinyl yet. So that continues to be the case. Although my Springsteen album, it said it shipped. So we'll see.
I mean, they've told me it did. This has been uncovered by the media, right? Another example of mainstream media not informing the public about the truly important things. Evidently, if the factory that makes all of this like resin that's required for vinyl for the whole world burns down in February, I don't know what else was going on in February and why you'd be expending journalistic resources towards covering other issues. It seems like that should have been on the front page of the New York Times, that now we can't get vinyl.
If Trump started talking about that at his rallies, that was like the new thing. I don't know, maybe
I'd watch that part. I'll take it over the water pressure bit. That's not a very good bit.
Oh my gosh. Well, now it's new on vinyl, but I am listening to it on Spotify. New Springsteen album. We haven't even had Rick Fry on yet to debrief, but
Springsteenicrist.
Letter to You is out, Zach. It is excellent. I gotta say, it's excellent. I know that sounds shocking that I would enjoy a Springsteen album.
Interesting take.
But he said, you get to a point with certain artists where you just enjoy it and they put out because it's like listen to an old friend. But I do think it's probably his best album since 2007's Magic. Like just top to bottom, it's really fire. And if you watch the documentary that's on Apple TV, which I know that you have and watched frequently.
You gotta pass along that password, man.
It really depicts the recording of this album happened in 4 days with the band playing live. And normally they don't like record like that. You record your part, mm-hmm. You do your track. But they recorded this thing mostly live, and it really has a warm feel to it. It's really incredible. So anyway, highly recommend. I know it's shocking that I'd recommend it, but I'll do it anyway. But the track that I really love from the album is called If I Was the Priest. Which is actually one of the three songs that was written in the early 1970s that he has now finally recorded. So if you want to know which three songs are from the 70s, they're the ones that are over 6 minutes long. but it's good. It's a good song. And then one more Springsteen album. I was like, do I know any wedding songs? Yes, I do. Springsteen's from the Seeger Sessions, so it's actually like an old folk song, Froggy Went a-Courtin'. And He Did Ride, it's like a good song. It's a whole bunch of people have recorded it, I'm sure, but we'll throw Springsteen's version of that from the Seeger Sessions album. And then one more, I've been listening to election playlists, and one song that's been thrown on there that came out this year is from John Batiste. Colbert, so Jean-Baptiste, with a whole bunch of collaborators. Listen to the number of collaborators here. St. Augustine High School Marching Band, 100, David Gauthier, Gospel Soul Children's Choir, Craig, Evans,
some guy named Craig,
someone else, Brandon Gauthier, Autumn Run. This is like 7-8 people. I don't know. It's insane. But it's called We Are.
All right.
It's by John
Baptiste. Noise. I like it, Matt. Over here at our house, our daughter is really expanding her musical horizons. Her favorite artist for a number of weeks now has been Shakira. But she's even growing from there, and that now perhaps her favorite artist is Jennifer Lopez. In particular, she loves the song, Dance the Night Away? La-la-la has the la-las, and she sings those as loud as she can, and then she says, Papa, it's amazing that my voice sounds exactly like hers. So we don't have to worry about ego. It's totally in check. So inspired by my daughter's musical taste right now, I'm going with Waiting for Tonight off of J. Lo's 1999 album. Really good song, you know, but that's what the bridesmaids are doing, waiting for tonight.
Yeah.
Then I'm continuing my Talking Heads, Matt, and it's the most known Talking Heads song for sure, but it is kind of about like waiting for a moment, once in a lifetime, off of Remain in Light, Matt, which was, maybe I've talked about it on the podcast, but it was recorded, they had no songs written, they went to the Bahamas, jammed, recorded all the songs, but none of the songs had lyrics because they didn't write them together, right? By the way, while they're in the Bahamas, like at night, Tina, Tina, who was the bassist and wife of the drummer, gets a call from the producer that that David Burns and Brian Eno are in here re-recording your bass parts, and they're trash. And so later she would go back and re-record her bass parts.
What?
Yeah, David Byrne, totally cool dude. But then Byrne takes it back to New York, where he just plays it over and over again and just like walks around his house like a crazy person, like making noises to it. And at the same time, he's been watching tons of TV preachers. So the whole album has this like TV preacher vibe. And so eventually like his like nonsense words start to sound like words to him. And that's how he wrote the lyrics to that whole album.
What?
Which is wild. And then the cover art is the distinctive like blue background with their pictures, but then like pixelated red on top. Which is, so this is the 70s, so like pixelated stuff, like hard to come by. So they worked with this kid at MIT, but they couldn't give him credit for it because he was using MIT's like computers and stuff to do it. And so Byrne hired this random dude to design, he wanted him to do the cover, but everyone else liked the other cover. And so he said, what if he designed the typography? So he designed the font for like $100,000 or $25,000 and then has always claimed credit for designing the whole cover. But once in a lifetime, off of, wow, I've learned so much about Talking Heads. You guys check it out. Are you Talking Heads to my Talking Heads? Talking Heads to my Talking Heads? It's, what a band.
I gotta get caught up.
It is the antithesis of what I imagine U2's life together as a band was like. And finally, Mandolin Orange, a friend of a friend of the podcast, came out with a new single this week, My Brother, My Keeper. And I was excited because I thought it like have like good vibes and stuff. But it's harsh. And it's harsh like these texts. It starts off first verse, as I went out on a day, roamed the hills and made my way. Good fortune failed, and to my surprise, my brother left me here to die. put away his blade and said, that's tough. The elements should take you soon enough. Yeah, there you go. I think it fits the text. Do with it what you will.
Do with it what you will. That'll preach. Outreach. Well, it's been a
real preacher, because we don't, vinyl's gone.